Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Three-year-old Timmy ran to the hook where he kept his winter jacket. He was so happy that his mom was up from her rest and they could go out together. He worked hard to snap the front of his jacket. His mom's jacket could only close at the top. She was going to have a baby soon, and all the grown-ups seemed very excited. At the library, a lady came up to them and leaned down just to talk to him. "What would you like your mommy to have?" she asked. "A baby boy or a baby girl?" Timmy thought that was a very silly question. "A girl," he announced firmly, clutching the books. "We already have a boy. What we really need," he thought to himself, "is a puppy." From a parent's perspective, how can we best prepare our children for the arrival of new siblings? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today we have a guest who has been through this exciting life stage as a mom herself and as a professional. Dr. Sharon Davidow has a PhD in clinical psychology and works with all ages of children as well as adults and families. She has a 13-year-old daughter and an 18-year-old son. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Davidow.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here with you today.
What kinds of sibling issues would you say tend to be universal when a family expects a second child?
I'm going to start by backing it up just a little bit, if I might, to how do you tell the child that a new baby's on the way. Mm-hmm. I think that that's an issue that a lot of parents struggle with or wonder about. The first trimester sometimes is very risky. People oftentimes don't like to share the fact that they're pregnant during the first trimester. And I think that if parents want to wait until later on in the pregnancy to tell the child, that's fine. But if there's a problem, if the mother is having health issues, is exhausted all the time. I know when I was pregnant with my second, I was nauseous 24 hours a day. And I would come home from work and I would literally crawl up the steps and collapse. And it was very obvious to my son that something was wrong. It wasn't the same mom he'd had 3 months before. So in that type of situation, I thought it was very important to let him know right then what was going on and what was happening to me and was going to happen to the family. I also think that it's important for the child to hear from their parents and not from neighbors or grandma or Aunt Susie. And so I think as soon as you start telling other people, the child has a right to know. So I think that that's the first issue that needs to get addressed. Some of the universal issues are you going to love me? Is there enough love to go around? Parents oftentimes wonder also, am I going to love this new baby? Am I going to love my older child the same after the new baby comes? And I think those are very real issues. And sometimes that does happen where the relationships do shift after the birth of the second child. And I think that's something that is honest and needs to be addressed and needs to be talked about. And yes, everybody may feel a little differently for a while, but that doesn't mean that you don't love him or her. And I think that that's something that just is going to continue through the pregnancy, through the birth, and I don't know how many times each one of my kids has said to me, "You love him more, you love her more." So I think that's just an issue that is there to stay. I think another universal issue is that the baby's going to be mean to me. It's going to hurt me, it's going to beat me up, it's going to say mean things, because I think that sometimes the expectations aren't very realistic that this little thing is going to come out, you know, totally helpless. So I think that that's one also that needs to get addressed.
Is it helpful to take children to pet shops or other places where they can see baby anythings so they can get a sense that this really is a very helpless, sort of pathetic little creature that comes out?
Yes, yes. And books that show pictures of newborn babies, and there are babies everywhere, shopping centers, restaurants. And most new moms will not object to. Yeah, they can obviously see that you're quite pregnant, coming up and showing your child their baby. And I think that that's a good way to handle that, too. But I think that realistic expectations on what this little one's going to come out being, you know, are they going to be better than me? Are they going to, you know, be bigger, stronger? Mm-hmm. All of those are issues.
Competition begins before the child arrives.
Right, right. I think that another one that really was an issue with my son was my changing shape. And I carry all in front, And so from the back, I don't even look pregnant, and I've got this huge stomach that truly, truly is impressive. And my son kept watching me grow bigger and bigger and bigger, and I didn't realize how scary it was to him until his nursery school teacher called me one day and said, he's hiding under the table, and he's not participating, and what's going on? I don't understand. He's not acting like he normally does. And so I got him aside and sat him down and talked to him. And it turned out that he was afraid that while he was in nursery school, I was going to explode. My stomach was going to get so big it was going to pop like a balloon. And I think that that wasn't something that I would have thought of. But when I looked at myself sideways in the mirror, it made sense.
Quite possible.
Right. So I got out pictures of what I looked like when I was very pregnant with him and showed him that I had been just as big before. And we looked at other moms who were really big, and just explained that as hard as it is to imagine, the women's stomachs can expand that much. And I remember he left one of his action figures, the big robot action figure, about a foot high, and he would leave that prominently placed in the house when he went off to nursery school, and that robot was to protect me.
Oh, how cute.
Make sure that didn't happen. Now, I was working at a mental health center at the time, and I mentioned to one of my colleagues what my son had done, and he said, well, isn't that interesting? I bet he really wanted your stomach to explode and this baby to disappear. So I think that was part of it, too.
Oh, it could be.
Are there ages or stages where children are especially vulnerable to these life changes in terms of their developmental schedule?
I think that all ages and stages are vulnerable. I really do. And there are different issues at different stages, but I think it's going to drastically impact a child, whatever stage they're at. And it's going to drastically impact the mother and father, too, because their family's changing also. I think that the younger the child, obviously, the less verbal they can be. But I think for children of all ages, they will play out issues. It's part of what I do is my work is I work with kids and I do a lot of play therapy. And it's absolutely amazing to me if I just non-judgmentally sit there and let the kids play and interact a little bit, but interact according to their script, not mine. They will play out whatever issues are going on inside them to an amazing amount. And if I just sit back and allow that to happen without being critical, at the time when I was pregnant with my daughter, my son was into He-Man and She-Ra, which was the action figure TV show of the time. And we had the little action figures, and He-Man and She-Ra were brother-sister. And so he would be He-Man, of course. And She-Ra got locked in a snake pit. And the door was closed because she was so mean to her brother. And no matter what I did, no matter what I did to intervene, no matter what I did to try to get She-Ra to behave, She-Ra was just mean and rotten and beat up He-Man all the time. So she got locked in the snake. But this is all I was saying. They're going to assume that the little one might be mean to them. And getting into my ninth month, She-Ra was still locked in the snake pit, and I was getting a little concerned because She-Ra was going to, little sister was going to come out one way or the other. And so a couple of weeks before I actually had my daughter, She-Ra finally got out of the snake pit, and we made arrangements that She-Ra would not be bad and would not hurt He-Man and would listen to Mommy and Daddy. And we would make sure that She-Ra didn't hurt He-Man, and so it did get resolved. But I was sweating it for a while.
You all got reassured,
right,
it sounds like.
Right, we really did. Aww. So I think that the more you allow kids to play and don't expect them to do a lot of talking, and even the older ones will play and will regress and play maybe at younger levels. I think another way is just to read books at whatever age level the child is at. If you can catch programs that deal with it on TV and then talk about it. And I think that any books that you read, whether it's about baby puppies, baby kittens, and how mommies handle that, or books on human siblings and how they interact. And I think librarians are wonderful at pointing you in the right direction on that.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on preparing our children for new siblings.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today, we're talking with Dr. Sharon Davidow about preparing our families for new siblings.
The book that I used actually showed pictures of fetal development and the different stages, and that was really helpful because then we could look at what she really looked like. She's as big as, you know, as a lima bean. You know? And it would really help him, I think, to get a realistic idea of how little she was. And as she grew, you know, oh, she's got fingernails this week, or oh, her eyes are opening now. That really helped. The other that I think really helped was to get my son involved with my daughter in utero, to listen to the heartbeat, to feel the kicks, to go to the doctors with me and, you know, with the doctor's stethoscope, to bring home pictures of the sonograms and to show what she looked like. These are pictures of your baby sister. And what I realized is in my third trimester, my daughter would respond to my son's voice. And if he was upset, she would be upset. She would kick more. And he would sing to her and he would rub my stomach and talk to her and we would read her stories. And it was very obvious when he came to visit her a couple hours after her birth that she recognized that his voice. And the studies show that in the third trimester, the babies can hear and they can very much start the relationship with their siblings in utero. And I think that's fun. That's fun.
That's fabulous.
The other thing I would suggest is that you start preparing the child for what babies are really like and how they play, so that you don't make fast movements. You make slow, gentle movements. Babies can follow slow movements. They'll follow your fingers back and forth. They'll grab hold of your finger.
You can't use the baby as a football,
right,
in other words.
Right, right. Be nice and gentle. And you can practice on baby dolls. And also very young babies will mimic facial expressions. So they can play all kinds of fun games.
Do you recommend, I know Linda and I both did this, do you recommend giving a rubber or plastic baby doll to an older sibling?
Yes. And I think that really, really helps.
How can parents prepare a fairly young child who's never been around a baby for the enormous demands on our time and attention that that baby will require?
I don't think there's any way really to fully prepare either ourselves or the new child, because even though we might remember what the exhaustion was like from the first child, it hits you over the head like a ton of bricks. And the utter exhaustion, the sleep deprivation, the added pulls on our time from having two children, not one. But I do think that we can start talking to the child about things will be different. Now, one of the mistakes that I made was reassuring my son that babies sleep. And therefore, when my daughter was asleep, that he and I would have one-on-one time and we could play. Well, my daughter still requires less sleep than anyone else in the family. First day home from the hospital, she was up 18 hours straight. Did not take a nap the first year of her life. Except
did she come
for,
with a warranty?
No. I was glad she was my second and not my first.
She would have been an only child.
She would have been. She was a happy, content baby, but she just needed constant stimulation. And as long as she was being stimulated, she was happy. But she woke up before my son. She went to sleep after him, and she never napped. So he never had a moment without her. And he kept looking at me saying, "You lied to me." So don't ever say, "This will be the way it will be," because you just don't know. I think that it's important for us to have standby plans, such as adults that the older child loves, who can come in and take them away from this situation when it's overwhelming, and who can also come in and stay with the baby while we go out one-on-one, because you really do have to reestablish that relationship with your older child, because it will be different. It'll be different for you. It'll be different for them. One of the most common calls that I get in my office is somebody who's I've worked with the older child for whatever reason. The mother gets pregnant, has the new child, calls, says, "I don't love her anymore." And it's like, and in tears. And this is normally a postpartum experience. And so I have to calm the new mom down, saying, "It's okay. It's normal to feel that way. Yes, you do still love your older child. Now here's how you reconnect." And the reconnection really needs to be one-on-one, because I think we're just programmed to give our attention and our time to the newborn baby because they need so much. And the older child is always going to be second in line unless we take the time to really just spend with them.
Sounds like even before the second child is born, it's a good idea to give some thought to people who can help you out in that situation.
Absolutely. I'd have a lineup. I'd have a lineup of people. The other thing that I think is very useful is to have lots of little presents tucked away. They don't have to be anything that costs more than 50 cents or a dollar, but they need to be wrapped and they need to be put away so that when the new baby is overwhelming, that or all the attention or all the presents are going to the new baby, that the older child does have things to unwrap that are special.
People sometimes have a present for the older child from the new baby when the baby gets home. How do you feel about that?
I think that's a great idea, but it only goes so far. And it's, you know, a story that's been told a gazillion times, but I think it's a metaphor. I think it's a good one to have, that if your husband came home with a new spouse and the new spouse gave you a diamond necklace, it would only go so far. And that's They really are similar, that this has been the one and only, the joy of your life, the center of attention, and they will never, ever, ever be that really again. And there's no stuffed animal is gonna really replace that. It is a loss, and I think you have to acknowledge that.
Do you think that a child who's had that center of attention kind of life for 5 years or 7 years is going to have a harder time than the child who's been the center of attention for 18 months or 2.5 years?
It's different. It's different. And I think that both are going to have somewhat of a hard time with it. Just fortuitous, but I think that the planning on my kids was perfect. 3 weeks after my daughter was born, my son started kindergarten.
Yeah,
and so I was thinking, well, he'll be, you know, distracted and have all this new stuff. It was still an issue.
My older son put it very succinctly. He told the cleaning lady, you see my new brother? I can't figure out why we need him.
Right.
Right.
Our perceptions of the older child obviously will change, just as your anecdote about the mother who called you in tears. How can we keep these expectations realistic and appropriate, you know, now that the child is older, to keep him from having to be the caretaker or whatever we're seeing?
I think that's a really good question. When I came home from the hospital, even though I'd only been there a day and a half, it was as if someone had given my son giant pills. It was as if he had just grown 100 times in that day and a half. All of a sudden, there was this tiny little baby in my arms and this huge, almost 5-year-old standing there. And I don't care if he's just 18 months, he's going to seem huge next to a newborn baby. Not only do we perceive our older children as so much bigger, but also all of a sudden they are older and therefore need to be more responsible. And this is a problem because they're not. They're still our little babies, and they're still really little kids, and we have to think about the expectations that we do put on them. I think that having the older child help is wonderful, but you have to be careful that they stay siblings and not Mommy Junior or Daddy Junior, because I think that throws off the sibling relationship and makes it hard for them to bond as siblings. And I used to think it was great when at about a year and a half on up, they would come together against the parents. You know, it would be the kids against the parents, and, you know, on games or on, you know, little things that they were trying to do and stuff. And I think that's healthy. And we need to make sure that they do stay siblings and not mommy helpers. It's real important for us to spend time one-on-one with our older child so that we can rebond with them and they can really rebond with us.
We wanted to know what you thought about taking children to the hospital to visit new siblings. After all, children are all different ages when new siblings are born.
I think that's a wonderful idea. In fact, most hospitals these days have sibling tours beforehand. And if your hospital does, I would definitely suggest you sign up for one of those, because then they get to see the hospital. They get to see where mommy's going to disappear to. They get to see newborn babies in the nursery. So it's a wonderful experience, and I think helps with some of the fears. And I think that the going into the hospital and seeing the mom and the new baby, I think as soon as possible is really good, because first of all, they can make sure that the mom is okay. And second of all, they can begin this bonding experience with a new sibling. And if they're old enough to safely hold the baby, you know, stick them in the bed, in the middle of the bed, and put them in the arms. And if not, you cuddle your older child and your new baby at the same time. And just spend some quality time, not too long, because they're going to get antsy and you're exhausted. But if you're going to be in the hospital for more than a day, let the child come a couple different times. My son came, I think, twice.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on preparing our children for new siblings.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Sharon Davidow about preparing our families for new siblings.
I will never forget, my oldest one was 8 when my third one was born, and I let him hold the baby with some trepidation with this child. And the first thing he did was pull up his shirt. And we were all sort of aghast. We didn't know what was going on. And he said, "I'm showing the baby that I can't nurse him."
Aww.
You never know.
Right. The reactions of the older ones do differ.
Right. Yeah. Right.
How should a parent respond when the bloom is finally off the rose and the child realizes that this baby is not going anywhere and we don't have a way of getting rid of him? Then what do we do?
I think that is absolutely a universal issue. And if your child's not talking about it, they're probably at least thinking about it. I would start during the pregnancy and talk about, this baby's going to be here all the time. This baby is at times going to cry, is going to stink, is going to throw up, is going to do all these things. And you're going to be tired of the baby and you're going to want, you know, I would have the child understand that that's a normal response.
So the kid is not going to be waiting with a welcome mat, it sounds like, right?
Well, I think that you talk about the good stuff and you talk about the reality of the not so good stuff, so that they're understanding both, and that most kids at some point want to get rid of the baby, don't want the baby to be there. And I think that if they know that's normal and healthy, but then when they start having those thoughts, they'll come and tell you. And I had gone through all of this with my son before my daughter was born, and that he could come and tell me anything that he wanted, and that was okay. You can't hurt the baby, but you can come and tell me. You can tell me anything you want. And so one day he comes down and he says, "I'm going to throw her out the window." And I know how to take the screen out the window. She was three floors at that part of our house where her bedroom was three floors up and concrete driveway underneath. "I'm going to take the screen off and I'm going to throw her out." And he was quite capable of doing that. And I just freaked. And he looked at me and he said, "Don't you know the difference between when I'm telling you something and what I'm going to do? Now, you told me it was okay to tell you anything." So it was at that point where I kind of said, well, maybe not anything. Maybe occasionally thoughts ought to be kept to oneself. But I was very glad that he could tell me. He was that angry about the situation, so we could talk about it. I really don't think he'd throw the baby out the window.
We were told a story a couple of days ago about a grandmother who came to take care of the children, and she asked the older child, "Well, what would you like to do today while I'm here with you?" And she said, "Well, we could paint, Grandma, or we could do a puzzle, or maybe we could kill the baby." That's how she felt.
And I think also, if we know as parents that this is normal and anticipated, then it's not so hard for us to hear. And it's not so hard for us to deal with.
It's the original loving the baby to death,
right,
so to speak.
Right.
Usually we like to leave our listeners with some resources that they can look for. And Sandy and I, in researching, came across some websites which people might like to check out. There was just a wealth of material. We didn't look at all of it. We used the keyword sibling rivalry, and it leads you all over the place. There is a website www.havinganotherbaby.com that we found interesting. We found a book by Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, for 2 to 5 year olds on the new baby. And since his approach has always been a very gentle one, that's probably a good place to look. And there's a very well-known book, Siblings Without Rivalry, by Faber and Maslisch. And as you suggested, Dr. David Al, go to the library and see your librarian for suggestions.
Yes, I think all those are wonderful. There's just one thing I would add. I think it's very easy to get overwhelmed with all the information that you're going to find out there, and the information will not always match up. And so you're hearing opinions that are 180 degrees opposite from each other. I think at that point, let the books go, let the experts go. Go with your heart, go with what you feel is right, go with your instincts. And most of the time, that's going to get you through. Mm-hmm. So don't let all the books and all the information be overwhelming.
You know your own child better than any of these experts do.
That's right.
Of course.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, you've gotten us through a wonderful time with a lot of very useful information. And Dr. Sharon David Al, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. And let us know what station you're listening to. We're now heard all over the world, so it's fun to know what station you're tuning in from. We'd like to send you Parents as Mentors. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web. For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, just send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
You can reach Parents Perspective through your local station or call our toll-free number 1-800-791-8573. You can also email us at parentsper@aol.com. That's parentsper@aol.com. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website. It's a shortcut address, http://i.am/parentsperspective. No W's, just http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Today's program is made possible by the generous support of Sandy Spring National Bank. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.